I had this idea, which was to do a survey of new franchisees because I wanted to know what the early take on their experience is like. I thought that would be incredibly informative for people who are thinking about making this leap right now. Do you enjoy being part of your franchise organization? 95% said yes, which is really great to hear. Do you enjoy operating your business? 93% said yes, 2% said no, 5% were neutral. How much business do you have right now? 11% said they're too busy. 48% said need more customers. 41% said we have what we want.
Hello, everyone. Thanks for tuning in to the latest edition of Fran Coach's Franchising 101 podcast. I am Tim Parmeter, founder and CEO of Fran Coach and your podcast host. Today, we have a guest going to come in and talk to us about an amazing ranking of franchises. Actually, third straight year that we've got these guys on to talk to us. It is such an important guest. I'm not even going to waste time telling you who the heck we are. You've already listened to some episodes, you know. So without, as they say, further ado, let's get our guest on the show. All right, now let's get to the good stuff. And joining us once again for this is like becomes an annual event now after 3 years, is the editor-in-chief of Entrepreneur Magazine, the one and only Mr. Jason Pfeiffer. Jason, how are you, sir?
I'm well. Always great to be here. Thanks for having me.
We appreciate it that... We've been at this a while. Literally, you are the first person now that is a third annual event. So I know balloons, whatever. Well, how do we get through that on the Zoom where we get some little pop-up thing?
Oh yeah, no, that's great. That's great. You don't, I would have expected a t-shirt or a mug or something from you. I get nothing.
See, we'll get your address afterwards. We'll hook you up
okay,
with all the Fran Coach gear. So yeah. we'll definitely take care of you. So thanks for joining us and always excited to have this one and just so much amazing things in the Entrepreneur Magazine. And here's a little cover of it.
Yeah, you're holding it up. For those who are listening in podcast form and you can't see it, the cover this year, in years past, we always have traditionally done a celebrity on the cover. Usually a celebrity associated with franchising, though, I'll be honest with you, not always. But this year, we decided to do something fun, which is to just create this fun, lively, silly, in some ways, collage of celebrity faces who are attached to franchising in some way. So you've got, who you got? You got Shaq serving you a little bit of everything, some Papa John's, some, you know, a bunch of different things. You got Pete Davidson with Taco Bell hoodie feeding Paris Hilton. You got Megan Thee Stallion with Popeye's hat. You got LeBron with a pizza that is on fire because the company is called Blaze. I did not suggest eating a pizza that's on fire. I would put it out before you eat it and more. And anyway, it goes on and on and it's a lot of fun. And anyway, the idea that we wanted to show was franchising is very, very public, attracts some of the most sophisticated names in business and is something that I think a lot of people are excited to be a part of.
Yeah, and you probably could just have Shaq on there as many things as he's involved in these days. So super cool. Yeah, and I didn't even until really like I was reading it in the magazine fell that I realized there's you open it up and there's a whole insert of more people on the inside. So basically, if you want to be hang with the cool kids like the celebrities, you get into franchise ownership. You're immediately in the cool kids club.
Yeah. And look, I should be very clear. We totally understand that celebrities are not the average entrepreneur. Sometimes I get people commenting on that. Why do you put a celebrity on the cover of the magazine? These people have resources that the rest of the entrepreneurs don't. And that's totally, totally true. The reason we've historically done it is, I mean, let's just be honest, because a celebrity on a magazine cover tends to grab eyeballs at an airport or something in a way that others don't. And, you have to think about the cover of a magazine as in ways a piece of marketing for the magazine, the way that Megan Thee Stallion may not be every kind of franchisee for Popeyes, but is, I believe, a franchisee of Popeyes. So we have leaned that way because it starts conversation. And I think that where big names go. I mean, these are sophisticated people with really impressive teams around them. And if they're seeing opportunity in franchising, then it's very reasonable for lots of other people to see opportunity there as well.
Yeah, absolutely. Just because they have more resources doesn't mean you don't have the resources for one of them. They may have 101 of them.
Yeah, that's right.
Right? It's just, it's all on the scale. So every year, we're in year 45 of this, mm-hmm. right? So I was like kind of just going back to the bit because there are, oh my gosh, look, 4,000-ish franchise brands throughout the United States. We're going to narrow them down to, or you guys did, the top 500. And a ton of things that go into this. Like, this is a lengthy product. I don't think people realize how, like, you guys aren't just randomly, like, pulling 500 out of a hat. There's a lot that goes into this. So can you maybe kind of give us a snapshot as to, like, kind of what that looks like?
Sure. So you're right. We are certainly not just pulling it out of a hat. And we very intentionally call this, you may find me slipping up on this because sometimes I'm not diligent with it, but we very intentionally call this a ranking, not a list, because it's a ranking, because it is a data-driven ranking. So the Franchise 500, for those who maybe are new to franchising, is the definitive longest-running ranking of the strongest franchises in America, operating in America, though many of them are operating internationally as well. And when we say strongest, we do not just mean largest. That's something that's incredibly important to us. We're not just ranking brands by size. If you are evaluating a franchise for yourself right now, something you have surely been told, and I'm here to reinforce, is that just because a franchise is opening a lot of units doesn't necessarily mean that it is the healthiest company. You have to look at a whole lot of factors. For example, if you're opening a lot of units, how many of those units remain open after a certain number of years? How are they growing? And it's for this reason, for example, that if you look at the top 10 of the Franchise 500 for a number of years now, you see a brand called Culver's. Now, Culver's, which is a Midwestern regional fast food-ish brand, they are considerably smaller than the other brands in our top 10, or other, you know, top 10 brands include Taco Bell, Dunkin', Kumon, UPS Store. These are, you know, huge international brands. Culver's is much smaller. But the reason why it's always on there is because it has very consistent and healthy growth for a franchise of its size. It has almost no closures, which means that it does an excellent job of identifying the right franchisees and then supporting those franchisees. It invests very heavily in franchisee support, which is something that we look at, and so on. So we want to make sure that we are identifying not just brands that happen to have the most units, that would be pretty boring and obvious, but instead brands that are holistically strong and growing. We have, and you can find more about this online, but I'll just say there are about 150 data points that we look at. And when I say we, I'll give major, major credit here to Tracy Stapp Herold on our team, who oversees the ranking along with the team every year. We start gathering data in the summer. We spend months crunching it. We're looking at everything from costs and fees to size and growth, support systems, which is amount of training, marketing support, operational support, and so on. Brand strength. We're looking at things like social media. We're looking at years in business. We're looking at financial strength and stability. So we're trying to take into account what matters to the long-term health and growth of a franchise. And we take very seriously the responsibility of informing potential franchisees of brands that they may want to look at. We're always very careful to say, you got to do your own research, but the list, the ranking, can be a great starting point for figuring out what brand could be right for you and what brand is looking strong.
Yep. So does that mean if a franchise is not on the Franchise 500 list, like, oh my gosh, that's terrible, I shouldn't do it?
No, not at all. and I mean, I know that's you were teeing me up for that, but no, certainly not at all. I mean, look, the the 501st brand in the ranking isn't significantly less strong than the 500th brand on the ranking. But also, this is the beautiful thing about franchising, which is that it is an industry that in many ways is built upon replication and longevity. A good franchise is one that is proven, that has staying power, and that understands how to replicate itself. But this industry would be dead a long time ago if it wasn't also a place where people bring fresh ideas, where they innovate, where they grow. We often see outside the official ranking really interesting trends and businesses that a year or two or three from now start to show up rather significantly in the rankings. We see companies that weren't ranked last year that suddenly landed in the 200s. We see brands that ranked in the 500s jump to the 100s. And this shows you that, first of all, there are great bets to be taken with brands throughout the franchising ecosystem, but also that sometimes a brand is primed for growth and is just a year or two away from that really showing up in the kind of way that would register on the ranking. There are all sorts of brands that when we look at why they jumped hundreds of points in the ranking, we find that, well, they just went through a leadership change, or they just stepped back and rethought their franchisee onboarding process. And then once they got that right, the franchisees were more successful. Openings led to more accelerated growth and so on. And once we see those kinds of numbers show up, they can jump. So you shouldn't take the ranking to mean this is definitely where you should put your money or this is definitely where you shouldn't put your money, but it's a really good survey of what the industry looks like right now and what is appearing to be very strong.
Yeah, no, and that's why I want to talk about that, because I think it is such a personalized and individualized process, finding that best franchise, right? I always like kind of like the kind of joke, it's kind of like dating, right? If there was a, 5 years ago, had there been a list of the, which it probably was, like the 500 most eligible bachelors, I'm pretty damn sure I wasn't going to be on there. But somehow my wife, like, finally, like, is like, okay, well, the old bald dude's not in the top 500. I'll marry him anyway. Right. So there is that kind of personalized piece of it. But I honestly, one of the things I like is how much, because they're focusing on the support, right? And really kind of that holistic aspect of this, because, could there possibly be some franchises that are, selling, and then they don't have the bandwidth to, like, oh crap, how do we actually support them and help them succeed, which is the real goal of this. And, there was one of the franchises, there's a section in the magazine about, you talk about those big jumpers, right?
Movers, we call them. Yeah.
Right. There's one in particular, they're like, we just stopped awarding franchises for a couple years to just like, let's pause, let's go back, which that takes some courage to be able to do that. Right. And so I love that kind of standpoint of focusing on the support. But talk to us a little bit about some of the things maybe you saw that are new, whether it's maybe somebody from one of those big movers, if it's any kind of new niches, categories that have really popped up here over the last year.
Sure. So as you're talking, for those who are watching the video of this, I'm holding a copy. I'm trying to find the big movers piece so that I can build upon some of what you're saying. But that's something that we do every year, is we look at the big movers on the list to try to understand what it was that they did within the past year to drive that growth. And you're right. One of the things that shows up every single year was a brand that basically paused growth on new franchisees. And there's always a very good reason for it. It's often because they realized that as they started to expand more, that their system wasn't actually built for that kind of expansion, and that they needed to step back and understand the pain points of new franchisees better, understand the friction that new units tend to run into, and then solve for that before getting back into the business of bringing new franchisees in. And for what it's worth, that's something that I have heard as origin stories for what are now incredibly large and thriving brands. I remember, for example, talking to the co-founder of Orange Theory a number of years ago, who told a very similar story in the early days. Orange Theory drove very fast growth and then realized that they hadn't built a system to move with great coordination all of their trainers. So instead, what was happening was that at each individual location, the owner, the new franchisee, who was sometimes the trainer, sometimes they hire a trainer, they were creating their own workout routines, and they hadn't been trained properly in what Orange Theory really was, and importantly, and sometimes hadn't actually been onboarded with the understanding that they were going to follow an Orange Theory model of training. And so they were coming in thinking they're going to do their own thing. And as a result, results varied widely. And you had some units that were doing really well. You had some units that were doing really poorly. And that company realized, we need to hit total pause on this, figure out which ones are working and why, how to make sure that everyone's on the same page, how to really make sure that we're systematizing our training. And only then, once we are very confident that we understand exactly how to onboard and grow, are we going to let more franchisees into the system? And that change is what saved Orange Theory from what it could have been a quick crash, and instead turned it into the thriving franchise that it is. So those things are really important to understand. Tim, you know, you had asked about trends. So I'm going to just read a little something to you. So it's something that I always love. This is probably my favorite part of the Franchise 500 every year, is seeing what new subcategories we create. Again, Tracy and her team do a great job of looking at what brands are ranking and how do we categorize it and then subcategorize them. And as enough brands of a certain subtype come in and start ranking, we have to create subcategories for them. And that starts to tell you some of the interesting trends that are happening in the space. So this year, here are some new subcategories showing up for the first time in the Franchise 500. Mental health services, very, very interesting. I think a couple of years ago, people might not have anticipated that it was even possible to franchise mental health services. It is. They're doing very well. Fencing, interestingly. Fencing being around your house, not swords. Yeah. although who knows, maybe next year, fencing with swords will be franchised. And laundromats, interestingly. And so that right there tells you a pretty wide range of innovation and new opportunities in the space. And each one of those comes with some kind of cultural or economic explanation for why these particular brands are doing so well. You know, if you zoom out, larger categories also always grow, typically because of interesting trends. For example, we've seen a lot of growth in the beverage category, and that's driven rather significantly by teas. So boba tea franchises are growing. And then there's also a lot of interesting experimentation with iced tea franchises, for example. And then sports is growing rather significantly as well. And that's driven a lot by pickleball. There are a lot of pickleball franchises out there. So you can see how shifts in culture or economics end up creating new opportunities and new growth in areas of franchising.
Yeah, no, and the mental health and the fencing thing, you're like, one, it's the more light that is being kind of on mental health and better mental health for all of us is amazing.
Yeah.
And then the fencing is like, well, I don't really like people, so I need the mental health, but I don't like, it's like when I keep in my own little bubble here, right? With the fence. Right. So, and you mentioned the pickleball thing, right? Like 5 years ago, I don't, maybe that was a thing. It just seven people in the world knew about it, but now it is, you can't go anywhere and not have somebody that's talking about it, playing it, whatever. Right. So, yeah. Super cool. One of the things that is in there too, there's a whole piece on, it's like cheesy buzzwords or really buzz letters, AI, right? Uh-huh. And technology and how that in industries that have nothing to do, that aren't tech driven, but the tech and the AI is coming in to really make a big difference. in theory, in a positive fashion, right? But talk a little bit about some of the things that you guys found and from an AI standpoint, and where that's coming into some franchises that maybe you wouldn't think would have AI.
Yeah, so this is super interesting stuff. It's funny. We tend to do a what's next in franchising piece every year in the Franchise 500, some kind of look ahead, trends, forecasts, so on. But this year, well, when I say this year, I mean 2023 was so dominated by conversations of AI that we said it doesn't make sense to do anything other than a giant piece about AI because it shows up everywhere. So I'll give you some of the examples. So the starting point when we open the piece is Carl's Jr. So Carl's Jr. is one of many franchise brands that is starting to use AI as the thing that you talk to at the drive-thru. So instead of pulling up and talking to a person, you're now talking to an automated voice that can contextually understand you. And this is great because it frees up the team, the human team inside, to do more human-oriented work. And it also, it can sometimes do a better job of understanding you. And it also has patience for people who are sometimes very annoying at drive-thrus. And I'm sure nobody listening to this is ever annoying at a drive-thru. And that is just the start. We found all sorts of really interesting stuff. I'm gonna read you just this little piece that I thought was mind-blowing for me, because I think we all understand some of the ways in which we interface with AI right now, right? We have all talked to a chatbot. It's not that far of a stretch to talk to what is really like a chatbot at a Carl's Jr. drive-thru. But when you think about how AI can be utilized in ways that you don't anticipate, this is a really great example. I'm just going to read from this story. So this is about a brand called Dirty Dough cookie franchise. Dirty Dough, for example, is a cookie franchise that founded in 2018 that now has sold over 400 franchises. Early on, the stores were so overloaded that it could take up to 45 minutes for a customer to receive their box of cookies. The franchisees wanted to solve this, but they didn't want to overstaff. Very reasonable, right? So what do you do? The solution the brand landed on was to install cameras that use machine learning and object detection to count the number of employees per hour, as well as customer wait times, and use an equation that considers both metrics to staff appropriately. The cameras will also be used for quality control and to enforce brand standards. Quote, some of our cookies were too messy because the employees put too much drizzle on top, so you can't eat them well in the car, Bennett Maxwell, founder of Dirty Dough, told, that was reciting a different podcast. Sorry, he was talking about that on the Franchise Secrets podcast. Another camera set up to face the cookies will detect not only whether the dimensions of the cookies are correct, but also whether the employees are decorating them properly. We all want to perform, Maxwell said, but sometimes we just don't know what we're doing. This camera system allows us to have better oversight and help our employees succeed. The idea is that the camera surveillance system would trigger not only corrections for staff, but also corrective interactions with the customer. For example, if the customer's cookie was too small, they might be sent a feedback question or offered a loyalty credit or a gift card. Anytime a customer has a bad experience, we want them to see that we are looking out for them, Maxwell said. So, and then it goes on like that. So here you have a very real problem where there is a overload of demand, which is leading to incredibly long wait times, which is a terrible experience for people and also a terrible experience for the staff who's now rushing to try to meet that demand. And as a result, is creating a poor product. And this is a deadly cycle. It's a hard thing for a human manager to improve upon. But once you have cameras and data, you're able to evaluate exactly where the demand is, how to solve for that demand, and how to keep quality high while also interacting with customers to make sure that they are either getting the best experience possible or are getting an acknowledgement of a lesser than experience so that the brand trust doesn't get reduced. That's pretty impressive stuff. And I think that's only the beginning.
Hey everyone, I want to take a moment to spotlight one of our premier franchise partners, Outdoor Lighting Perspectives, or OLP. OLP is an exciting opportunity under the Empower Brands umbrella. It excels at giving owners a leg up in a niche market as they specialize in the design, installation, and service for landscape and architectural lighting systems. With services for residential and commercial customers, OLP reaches a wide range of consumers, and they've even expanded its client base by adding holiday lighting to its suite of services. OLP is the largest exterior lighting franchise in North America, and their franchisees love the opportunity to build a business that has multiple revenue streams and allows them to create lasting customer relationships. An OLP owner won't be spending their day installing lights. No, what you're gonna be doing as an OLP owner is you're gonna be in a leadership role, gonna be building your team, consulting with your customers, and creating great relationships in the community. Sounds pretty amazing, right? Well, if you'd like to learn more about how OLP could be your perfect match, reach out to us today so we can help you create your better tomorrow. Hey everyone, I wanted to take a quick break from our podcast to tell you about our amazing friends at Entrepreneur. If you're looking to become a franchisee or simply learn more about business ownership, and guys, let's be honest, you're listening to the Franchising 101 podcast, so we know you have some interest in this. And I really encourage you to go to entrepreneur.com to check out all of their great content and resources. Seriously, Entrepreneur has everything, all the way from a bookstore to the best podcasts, webinars, and videos, plus information on upcoming events and the latest articles that seriously, they cover all aspects of franchising and business ownership. If you're having trouble deciding which franchise is right for you, start with Entrepreneur's renowned Franchise 500 ranking, which highlights the best franchises of 2022. For 45 years and counting now, Entrepreneur has been and continues to be the most widely recognized and respected authority in the franchise market. Digital and print subscriptions are available, so you never miss out on anything. So seriously, what are you waiting for? Go to entrepreneur.com right now and learn more. When you think of what a franchise really is, for you, you coming in as a franchise owner, the number one thing every franchise is going to say, we want somebody who's going to follow the plan, right? Put forth the effort, follow the plan. So as a for our clients or somebody looking at a franchise, I want to understand what's their vision, right? Well, this is how we've always done it. This is how we're always going to do it. Okay, that would have crushed that particular franchise, right? If they're not able to hear and have that collaboration with their owners of what is the feedback? It's a weird issue. They had so much business that it was causing them, they were eventually going to lose the business, right? So to be able to have that communication back and forth is really key. And not every brand is going to be able to do that. So
totally. And you can get creative on staffing then. If you know that there's going to be a particular rush at some certain time, then you can staff just for that. And therefore you can make your operations and your costs as efficient as possible, but also make sure that people are getting their cookies when they want them.
Right. Yeah. Well, and you go back to the Carl's Jr. Thing. Well, somebody might go, well, geez, that AI at the drive-thru cost somebody a job. Well, it probably just moved that person inside or into the production. So now everything is getting done faster, which again is going to make the customer happier because let's be honest, none of us have any patience. Right. And so like, I need my cheeseburger and fries and I need it now, right? So if that gets that moving along, even better. So
yeah, actually the job loss thing is a really important thing to note because it is true that you can use technology to make things more efficient and to reduce costs, but we're not talking about replacing hordes of humans with hordes of robots. The shifting of jobs is something that, as you said it, it's really important to emphasize. So something that we've been seeing in research into what happens when franchises and other businesses too, but franchises are doing it a lot, put ordering kiosks inside of their spaces. It does, the ordering kiosk does now replace a human being who was taking your order, but it doesn't actually interestingly reduce jobs. And the reason for that is because once you have ordering kiosks, ordering is more efficient, which means that there's now more orders coming in than there were before. And also, because ordering is easier, customization is easier. People are now ordering a wider variety of customized food or product. And as a result, there has to be more people in the kitchen to manage those more complex orders. So you end up not reducing people, but in fact, actually either keeping or increasing the need for people, but also increasing the business as a whole. And I think the thing that people often get wrong when they think about AI and other kinds of automated technologies is that they think of everything as a zero-sum game, and it's not. There's a great economic theory called the lump of labor fallacy. The lump of labor fallacy is built off of the fallacy that there is a fixed lump of labor, which is to say a fixed amount of work to be done and a fixed number of people to do that work. And so if you imagine that there's a fixed lump of labor, then anything that creates an imbalance there throws the entire system off, right? So if you're in a world in which there's just a fixed amount of work to be done and a fixed number of people to do that, then technology that could maybe do the jobs that humans used to do would create an imbalance where now there's too many people and not enough work to be done. This is also the reason why, for example, people tend to oppose immigration, because they believe that immigrants are going to come in and take jobs. But the reality of it is that there's not a fixed lump of labor. The labor pool and the amount of work to be done is ever fluctuating. So if you create more efficiencies through technology, you end up driving more business, which then requires more jobs just in different areas. Similarly, when immigrants come to a country, they don't just show up as workers, they also show up as consumers. And so they impact that ecosystem in both ways. So there isn't a fixed lump of labor. There isn't just a one-to-one add technology, reduce people. It's far more complex than that. And I think that the brands that get that right are going to see increased value and more jobs and more demand.
Yeah. No, the more efficient, the more business you're going to have, right, with it. So, and I think this comes up in a lot of different industries, but when we're talking about technology, like, I'll just kind of piggyback off of that, is we'll have people that'll come in and think that their whatever their passion area is has to drive, right, what the business is, right? Like, oh, I'm really experienced, really passionate about tech, therefore I need a franchise in the tech space. Well, maybe, right? But the amount of franchises that we'll use, and we've kind of focused on retail ones, but even non-retail service-based franchises that have this amazing tech platform that is really kind of their differentiator from competition, especially like, you know, the mom and pop things that certainly can't come anywhere near being able to compete with that. Some people can get in kind of behind the scenes in a franchise and just be blown away by all the things that they have in place, their vision for growth and implementing those things. And so it's one of those things where you can go, like, you think you have a passion, or you do have a passion to something, you think that's the place for you to go. Like, with technology and some of the amazing things franchises are doing to help grow that efficiency and just be stronger businesses is really cool. So I'm sure, yeah. I know you saw a lot of that.
Oh, I see a ton of that. I mean, this is also a place where prospective franchisees should be really smart in how they evaluate brands, because just like any other kind of buzzy thing, there's a lot of brands out there that'll talk about the technology that they're using, but that technology may not be having a meaningful impact. I actually have a friend who works for an agency that helps brands inside and outside of franchising build loyalty programs. And she said the dirty secret is that some loyalty programs work really well and some of them are absolute disasters. Everyone talks about the loyalty program, but that doesn't mean that it works. Right. So you want to be really smart about who you're aligning with and make sure that if a brand is talking about technology, that you're seeing that technology is making a meaningful impact. And the brands that are using it smartly are really worth betting on, because they're seeing the opportunity. They've built the technology systems. They have the right staffing, and they understand their consumer, and they understand their operations. And then I think some other brands are just rushing into it to just be able to say that they have technology. Right. So you want to be smart about that, but But where it's done well, it can have an incredible impact.
Yeah. Are you doing it to say you're doing it, or you're doing it to make an impact? Right.
Yeah, that's exactly right. Yeah.
Go back to the I almost said list, the ranking.
There you go.
There we go. Yeah. and I'll spare everybody the drum roll, but we'll go buy the dang magazine, or I guess you could find it online, but buy the magazine. It's better for Jason. So top numero uno for once again is
Taco Bell for the fourth year in a row. Taco Bell. That is the second place. They are now in second place for all time consecutive wins. The leader there is Subway, which once had it 7 years in a row. But Taco Bell going real strong, number four. I'm throwing a lot of numbers around. This is the fourth consecutive year in a row in which Taco Bell has been number one.
Anything in particular that you think has made that happen for them?
Yeah. Look, there's nothing but good numbers to talk about, and we print a bunch of them. You can dig in, but the brand strength is very strong. Revenue, incredibly strong. Unit growth, strong. All the factors are there. Something that has been incredibly valuable for Taco Bell over the last number of years has been the smartness that it has applied to being part of the cultural conversation. It is so, so smart about being a brand that is cool, about identifying, their new CEO as of January 1st is a guy named Sean Tresvant, I think is how you pronounce his name. I keep forgetting. So sorry, Sean, if I got it a little wrong. Sean was the CMO of Jordan Brand at Nike for a long time, and then came over to Taco Bell a couple of years ago as the chief brand officer, I think, or chief international brand officer, something like that. And, that's a guy who understands marketing, but also understands culture, understands how to make sure that brands have a cultural resonance. Do that so incredibly well at Jordan Brand. And he comes over to Taco Bell, and they're looking for opportunities to be part of the cultural conversation, to engage not just celebrities, but everyday people in the things that they love most about that brand. So a couple of the things that Sean has already become famous for doing is, I'll list off a couple. So one thing was at the beginning of COVID, Taco Bell, like everybody, was trying to make adjustments, cut costs where they could, and they cut the Mexican pizza from their menu because I think, whatever the process of making it or some of the ingredients, whatever, there was some efficiency reason to do it. And this sparked a lot of complaints. People were very upset. They loved the Mexican pizza. Where's my Mexican pizza? And I think it was it Doja Cat who had in particular tweeted out and demanded that the Mexican pizza be brought back. So they recognized an opportunity here. I mean, this is great brand management 101, which is that when you see something, you think, is this a problem or is this an opportunity? You always want to tilt towards, is this an opportunity? And the opportunity here, of course, was to bring back something that people loved. As a starting point, they partnered with Doja Cat, who brought back the Mexican pizza, and it like instantly sold out. And then they built a program where Taco Bell fans can now regularly vote on which old menu item to bring back. Because this wasn't just about the Mexican pizza. What this was really about, Sean recognized, was how the menu items on Taco Bell tie to people's sense of nostalgia. And people have been with this brand for decades. And if you can bring them in and make them feel a part of that process, they're going to be fans for life. And they're going to feel like they had a part in the shaping of that brand. So that's one of the things he did. There was a really brilliant move where a competitor, Taco John's, I think, held the trademark for Taco Tuesday. And so Taco Bell rounded up a whole bunch of celebrities. LeBron was one. There were others. And created a Liberate Taco Tuesday campaign where people could participate in trying to pressure Taco John's, basically the courts, to invalidate that trademark so that everybody could use the phrase Taco Tuesday. It worked. Taco Tuesday was liberated. It was very clever. So they're doing this kind of stuff. They're driving incredible results. And one last thing I'll say, I know I've been going on and on about Taco Bell, but is they are very, very well known for having strong collaborative relationships with franchisees. I talked to Sean about this myself. He said that the way that they think about their relationship with franchisees is it's okay to disagree. The, you know, Taco Bell corporate and individual franchisees may have different visions on how to execute something. They're going to discuss sometimes, the way he said it is, sometimes you're going to win, sometimes we're going to win. But as long as the consumer is always winning, then we're all winning. And I think that's a really healthy attitude and something that is easily seen throughout that system. Some of the most innovative menu items, some innovative marketing techniques have come out of franchisees who have an idea, bring it to Taco Bell writ large, and it gets implemented system-wide. And that's how a healthy system is run.
Well, and I just love all their stories with that. But when it comes really down to it, it's all about the people. And they actually do this crazy thing called listen. It's kind of a lost art sometimes, right? But, I think one of the hidden things for people as they're looking to find a franchise is, how do you connect with the people within that, in that franchise, the leadership team, their vision, the other franchisees? Do you feel like you're in the right room? And so it's no surprise. And that's I'm glad you talked about that, because I think they've just, over the years, they've done a very good job of just actually, and not just their franchisees, but you mentioned the consumers.
Listen to them. It's so important to have that great relationship. And if you are a prospective franchisee, it is, and Tim, I'm sure you say a version of this all the time, it's so important to be talking to existing franchisees to understand what that relationship is like between the franchisee and the franchisor. Is it a relationship of open communication? Is it one in which all ideas are valued? I mean, look, obviously, it can't be chaos for individual franchisees, can't be, right, you know, breaking off from the system. But we want to make sure that good ideas are heard, and that there's an active conversation that's happening both ways. I'm going to read to you just a few things that Sean Tresvant, the new CEO of Taco Bell, said to me in the interview that I did with him. So one thing, these are his words. I believe this organization has a very high trust bar, not only internal to Taco Bell corporate, but also with franchisees. Again, tie it back to the origin story. Where would the brand be if we didn't take some big swings? The origin story being, of course, that Gordon Bell, is that his name? I can't remember the founder's name. Tried to launch a Mexican food brand at a time in which nobody was eating Mexican food. If we didn't say, just go with us on this one. Sometimes we get it right more times than not, but sometimes we take a swing and instead of a home run, it might be a double, but we learn from it. And then later, what makes the Taco Bell system unique is its incredible dialogue. In my first couple of weeks on this job, a lot of franchisees called me personally and we talked about the business. We talked about my vision. We talked about their vision. We talked about what they think is working, what they think is not working. I think whenever there's a big decision to make, there is what I will call radical candor with respect. Because we're a system. Everybody wants to do the right thing. But at the same time, we're not afraid to have tough conversations, have great debates, all in the service of getting to either the right answer or aligned around an answer. I love that. I love that phrase, radical candor with respect.
Yeah. Yeah. No, absolutely. Which is why they are where they are, right? Yeah. I love that they went back a couple years ago and really, like, not just listen to the consumer, but we're paying attention to them, right? Mm-hmm. And there was something in there that I read that kind of triggered, and I'm like, how long they've been around. Literally, the very first time I ever had a taco in my entire life was at Taco Bell, right? Huh. I'm like, I don't know this was, right? growing up in rural Indiana back in the olden days, right? Like there weren't a lot of tacos.
Not a lot of Mexican food. Yeah, right. That's exactly right. let's see. I've got the number right here. Taco Bell started franchising in 1964.
Oh, I'm not that old, Jason. So But no, super cool. I know you and I, we could go on this for hours talking about this, and I want to kind of throw one last thing at you and try to be respectful of your time. But I guess maybe from all of the stuff in here, anything else that you really wanted to kind of make sure to point out or kind of chat about before we let you escape today?
Oh, sure. Well, especially because we were talking to primarily an audience of prospective franchisees, I'm going to highlight for you this thing I really loved in the issue, which was I had this idea, which was to do a survey of new franchisees who have been in business for 5 years or less, because I wanted to know what the early take on their experience is like. I thought that would be incredibly informative for people who are thinking about making this leap right now. And so we have printed pages upon pages of results from this survey. I'm just going to share some of them with you. So again, this is something that we conducted this in partnership with Franchise Business Review, which produces reports for franchise buyers. And we had them survey 232 new franchisees. And I'll just give you a couple, and by new franchisees, I mean people who've been in business for 5 years or less. So here's some of the data points. And Tim, I could be curious for any of your responses to any of this. So number one, we asked, did setting up your franchise cost in time and money about what you expected? 59% said yes, 21% said no, 20% were neutral. I kind of regret having a neutral option. I don't really know what people mean by that. How many hours a week do you work? This was interesting. So less than 30%, or I'm sorry, 18% said less than 30 hours a week. 20% said 30 to 40 hours a week. 23% said 40 to 50 hours per week. 50 to 60, I'm sorry, 20% said 50 to 60 hours a week, and 19% said more than 60 hours a week. It's a pretty wide range. It's interesting. It's almost kind of evenly divided among that segment. But I think something that's really important for people to absorb there is, you have to understand the commitment level per brand and make sure that the brand that you're buying into, that you're really aligned with what it takes to be successful in that brand. A couple other data points. There's a lot of them in here, but do you enjoy being part of your franchise organization? 95% said yes, which is really great to hear. Do you enjoy operating your business? 93% said yes, 2% said no, 5% were neutral. How much business do you have right now? 11% said they're too busy. 48% said need more customers. 41% said we have what we want. And I'll give you one other for now, which is, would you, oh no, well, I was going to say, would you recommend your franchise brand to others? 50% said yes, but that's less interesting. I'll say, oh, how about this? This is cool. How much did you know about franchising before you started researching it? 21% said they knew it well. 53% said they understood the basics. 22% said they knew nothing, and 4% said they thought it was just for restaurants. And I, I like that because something that I hear from so many franchisees that I speak to is where they, almost every franchisee that I ever talk to will tell me where they came from, what they were doing before. And they'll almost say it as a marvel. I was doing whatever and it had nothing to do with this thing that I'm doing now. And it felt like it felt like a great transition for them. But the thing is that, I mean, look, unless for some weird reason the thing you were doing before was running a franchise brand, then like at some point there has to be a starting point. And that starting point is almost always going to be creating or introducing some new opportunity. And I think what people tend to find is that although on its face, it may seem like a large leap, I used to be working in a corporate environment in some kind of middle management, and now I'm the owner of this franchise. There's actually a lot of transferable skill and value that comes along with it. So the things that you learn to do really well, to be an operator, to be a communicator, to be a leader, those things port over pretty directly into franchising, but there's still a big learning curve in understanding franchising, understanding a system, learning the brand that you're buying into. And so it's this interesting mixture. And I wanted to test that. And I think what I saw, there were a couple other questions that were like that, revealed that new franchisees tend to be coming from a very wide variety of spaces. One other thing. Sorry, this has become a long monologue, but I'll just tell you one other thing and then I'll finally shut up, which is we asked, where were you working before you bought your first franchise? Where were you working just before you bought your first franchise? So here it is. Here's the breakdown. 23% said they were at a small business. 11% said that they were at a medium-sized business. 33% said they were at a large business. 24% said they were self-employed, and 9% weren't working. Again, a very wide distribution. People are coming from all sorts of backgrounds. I'm sure that they are carrying with them all sorts of skills and insights, and they may not know exactly how these are going to be relevant to the franchise experience, but they're, one, going to discover that they are, and then two, I would hope that through great collaboration with the brand and the onboarding process and the training, they're going to discover how some of these talents and skills that they have, they may not even realize are going to be incredibly useful, are not only useful, but can be directly applied and grown and taught to the people that you hire.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And I think the one stat that was in there was the industry. Did you have any experience in your current industry before buying the franchise?
Oh,
57% was no, which I thought that was low. Like from our experience on this, it's like hardly, let me rephrase that. Almost everybody we work with goes into a franchise that they have little to no experience in, right? Or maybe they've done it a little bit in the past, or they've dabbled or whatever, but and you think of like in the job search, and you try to go from, I'm the vice president of sales in industry X. Like, I'm sick of industry X. I want to go to industry Y for the same vice president of sales. You got no shot, right? Yeah. Like, they're just like, oh, I'm sorry, Jason, but you don't have any industry experience. You're like, I've got all these transferable skills. And franchise, that's what it's all about, right? Mm-hmm. It's like, well, I always call it the get out of bed test, right? You're the one that's got to get out of bed every day and go run this business. What are you good at? What do you want to go do? Like, these, we're talking to smart, successful people. So learning the intricacies of how to make the chalupa at Taco Bell, which isn't your job anyway, really isn't all of that challenging. It's going to be all of those other facets of the day in the life that come into play. So no, I honestly, what you pulled out was my favorite part of the magazine. One, because I like, you know, and I was going to joke, like, I am a reader, but this is still easy to read, right? It's the it's the infographic piece.
Right. It's all little charts and pictorial things. Yeah. Yeah. It's a lot of fun. Yeah. Yeah. You know, this one really tells it, right? Which is the bigger reason you picked your specific franchise brand? 71% said the lifestyle, 29% said the money.
Yep.
Really important, right? Because people are making holistic decisions about their full lives when they make this decision.
Yeah, without question. And the phrase I always use is the money follows the fit anyway. Mm. So when you find the right fit, one unit of a franchise might hit all of your goals for what you want, right? Again, we don't have to be Shaq and own hundreds of Papa John's, right?
Right.
Or whatever. And I think that's the fallacy there too with this, is that the top performers in the franchise system are the happiest. Sometimes it's the ones that are kind of in the middle. If they're hitting their goals, mm-hmm. of how much money they're making, the time they're spending, that lifestyle piece, that is the, like, without question for everybody we work with, and probably people that are listening right now, like, I'm sick of my job. I'm sick of how much time I'm spending for somebody else. I want control over my lifestyle. This is the way to go.
Yeah. Yeah. And then there's a page at the very end of this survey feature, which I think everybody should dig through because the answers were so fun, which is where we asked franchisees, what's your favorite part of being a franchisee and what's the most annoying thing you have to do as a franchisee? And the answers were so great. It was hard to just pick the ones to fit in here because, you know, we had hundreds of answers, but I'll just give you a couple. So what do franchisees love? What's your favorite part of being a franchisee? Knowing that I'm building a business, not just working a job. These are just, you know, answers pulled from the survey. The annual conference. I actually speak at a lot of these conferences. They're great. They're a lot of fun. The relationships with customers, freedom to enjoy your hobby and earn a living doing it. My team, me and my son own it and get to work together, the ability to make my own decisions, and so on. What do they hate? Paperwork, taxes, paying royalties, but I understand the reason. Telling potential clients we cannot help them, cold calling to get new business, repeatedly answering the same questions from clients because they didn't read the information I sent them, which answers the exact question that they're asking, which I think everyone can relate to that. Technology issues, when workers do not show up for work, chasing after businesses that don't pay. So, you know, it's like, look, which problems you want to have, right? Do you want to have the problems in whatever career you're looking to get out of, or do you want to have the problems that are the toll you have to pay for you know, this new exciting career? I think it's important to see that kind of stuff because nothing's going to be perfect. Nothing's going to be easy. You're still going to have to pay taxes and do paperwork regardless of what you're doing, but hopefully you're having more fun doing this.
Yeah. And even the bad things, you're in control of fixing them.
Yeah.
Right. So, super cool. Jason, as always, my friend, thanks for coming on and talking to us again. And, we'll just go ahead and pencil in, the fourth annual, next January for this. So thank you again, seriously, for coming on. And if you guys don't have this yet, go, like, again, you can go online, but the heck with that, go buy, go old school, buy the dang magazine. There's so much good stuff in there. You're going to want to be bookmarking things. So go pick that up today. So Jason, thanks so much for coming on and joining us today.
Oh, hey, I appreciate it. Such a pleasure. Yeah, you can find this issue wherever you find magazines, you know, so just go out to wherever that is. If you do want to see the ranking by itself, entrepreneur.com/franchise500. That's the word franchise, and then the number 500 is where you can find it. But yeah, you get the really robust experience when you pick up the magazine. So thank you so much, Tim, for having me on. And when I come back next year for the fourth in a row, I will have reached Taco Bell's four in a row number one ranking. So that's exciting. I'll bring a taco.
I was going to say, I'll DoorDash you some tacos that day.
Yeah, thank you. I appreciate that.
Awesome. Thanks, Jason. Have a great day.
Thank you.
So again, thanks to Jason Pfeiffer from Entrepreneur for joining us today. And as always, we want to thank our loyal listeners for tuning in. If this didn't get you intrigued about franchise ownership, then, like, really, I don't know what else is going to work. You know how to find us, francoach.net. Franchising101podcast.net. Again, we're always .net here at FranCoach. There's never any fee to 4-hour service. Let us help you figure out if this is the right thing. And then again, you know how overwhelming this can be to find your best thing. That's what we're here to do. Help you create your better tomorrow. Also want to give you a quick reminder, speaking of our pals over at Entrepreneur, on February the 7th at 3 p.m. Eastern, there is a live webinar that I'm going to be on. We're going to be talking about, go figure, franchises, how to find, what are the best ones, how to find them, all of that fun stuff. So feel free to tune in over there as well. In the meantime, we'll be back next week with more fun stuff in franchising. Thanks for tuning in, everyone. Have a great rest of your day.